We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
It's time for the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Get inside into your favorite West Virginia University teams and hear exclusive interviews. Now, let's go live inside our MSN studios. Here's your host of the Mountaineer Insider, Dan Zangrilli.
And welcome to Texas Week, everyone. It's the Mountaineer Insider Podcast here on MSN. Dan Zangrilli in the air chair with you, getting you ready for the big showdown in Austin with a couple of teams that hold identical records. And there's so much at stake as far as the Big 12 standings are concerned. And we're happy to break it all down with you here today. I'll be joined by Kirk Bowles coming up. He's been a staple in the Austin media circuit for nearly 50 years. We're so happy to get Kirk on the Zoom call here today to break down everything going on in Austin. And there's a ton going on in Longhorns country, because the lofty expectations that have been put forth in Texas are not being met by head coach Tom Herman. Two losses already on the ledger, and fans are really not in a good spot. So we're going to get all that put into perspective and proper context, despite Texas handling OSU in overtime and squeaking by to give the Pokes their first loss of the season. It's 4-2 for the Texas Longhorns, and it's also 4-2 for West Virginia, 3-2 in league play after both teams prevailing on Saturday. West Virginia, of course, doing so in a convincing fashion with a 37-10 victory over the Kansas State Wildcats, at the time ranked number 16. And finally, West Virginia is starting to receive some votes in the top 25. While they haven't been able to crack the top 25 just yet, people are starting to take notice at exactly what Neil Brown has going on. What they had going on, folks, Saturday was just all four phases of the game. The coaching was on par. That's phase one. Offense, defense, special teams winning every single quarter. One of the more convincing victories for West Virginia in their history over a top 25 foe. A big part of that was what they did with their tight ends. Directly, Mike O'Loughlin, he had a really good game, more so blocking and getting a lot of pre-snap motion and keeping Kansas State on their heels. We'll talk to O'Loughlin coming up a little bit later on in the podcast. He had two receptions, 32 yards. His counterpart, TJ Banks, also had a terrific game. The tight end has really emerged in West Virginia's offensive prowess, which, by the way, has been more than just competent offensively, right? It is actually a top 20 offense. So look at the numbers. West Virginia is really balanced. Letty Brown is running the ball as good, I think, as any back in the Big 12 at this juncture. Jared Dagey continues to improve, and I think we're seeing less drops, less mistakes on the offensive side of the ball, and emergence of guys like O'Loughlin and TJ Banks, where you can really see tangibly and measure their contributions rather than it just being maybe anecdotal or behind the scenes from the tight end room. So that's all good stuff that we have coming up for you here on this week's edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. Directly ahead, though, Kirk Bowles with a scouting report on Texas, what the tone and the tenor is. West Virginia heads to DKR Stadium as they have had an inordinate amount of success there. In four or five meetings, they have prevailed, and who could forget? The last time we were there, it was one of the all-time great wins in West Virginia history. The Will Grier to Gary Jennings touchdown, and of course, going for two to throw the horns down. And West Virginia able to prevail, and hopefully they'll be able to do the same. Coming up on Saturday at noon, we'll have coverage for you beginning at 8:30 right here on the Mountaineer Sports Networks. Thanks for stopping by this MSN Insider. Back in just a moment with Kirk Bowles. Since 1973 at the Austin American Statesman, he has, for over 25 years, been a columnist for them, and he has his finger on the pulse as good as anybody. And what does a win mean? What does a loss mean? It's all interesting stuff that is boiling, or at least about to reach a boiling point in the Lone Star State. So stay with us. We'll have that plus Mike O'Loughlin coming up after these words on MSN, the Mountaineer Sports Network.
Today tastes like game day at home. Like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining. And an ice cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola. Together tastes better.
Well, Kirk, just an absolutely huge win under the circumstances of everything going on in Texas this past Saturday in Stillwater. So let me ask you essentially what that meant. And had Texas lost that game to OSU, what would the tone and the tenor be coming into this West Virginia game? Any different than it currently is, or is it still kind of a frustrated tone and tenor from the fan base that is expecting more than two losses on the Longhorns' ledger?
Yeah, they're setting records for frustration down here, Dan. Yeah, I think had they lost in Stillwater to Oklahoma State, it would have been catastrophic. Not so much by losing to a team ranked number six in the country, but it'd be their third conference loss, as you said, and they would have been effectively out of the Big 12 race. They're out of the CFP race. I think everybody acknowledges maybe the whole league is. But, yeah, it was like this was going to be their year. They really thought last year may have been the year, Dan, but since it didn't turn out to be in an 8-5 season with Sam Ellinger coming back for his fourth year as a starter, they really felt like this was the year. So, you know, it's almost like we're going from one must win last Saturday to another must win this Saturday. And, you know, when you have two losses, same as West Virginia, you just don't have any margin for error anymore.
So what happens if West Virginia comes into Austin again, where they've had a great deal of success all time, and they pull off a victory? What does Monday morning look like on talk radio? What does Monday morning look like in the Austin American Statesman? How are you writing that up, should West Virginia, who's feeling really good about themselves after the victory over Kansas State, what does it all mean? What's it all at stake here, Kirk?
Well, it'd be a Monday meltdown, and we're used to that here in Austin. And the state capitol is here in Austin for a reason. It's a very political job, but Mac Brown used to say he's got a more important job than the governor because he answers to so many Monday morning quarterbacks and critics. So It's almost like, Dan, every game is a measuring stick or referendum on Tom Herman's ability to go forward as a head of this program. This is year four, and they're only 28-17, which is not what they expected when they gave him the lengthy contract and extended him after beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. So he knows he has not met expectations, and they feel like they've kind of, in many respects, Dan, squandered the great career of Sam Ehlinger, who's a top 10 quarterback in school history and has huge numbers. He's as good a clutch quarterback as they've had. But the feeling is pervasive, I think, among the fan base that Tom Herman just hadn't got it done. And I think in a lot of their minds, Dan, you know, they feel like he's not the guy and they need to make a change no matter what. But I'll say this, the die hasn't been cast yet, but he would do himself many favors if he wins out these last four games, or at least finishes 7-3 in the season mark.
So Kirk, with every game and every Monday essentially being a referendum, and so much hanging in the balance here, is that fair or is it unfair for Tom Herman? You mentioned 28-17. Okay, that's below the mark, and he's admitted as and accepts as much, but as it pertains to health of the program, direction of the program, don't you want at least to try to calm the waters, at least giving a guy a decent sample size of time to figure this out? So I ask you the question, for you've covered Texas for as long as you have. Is Tom Herman being treated justly, fairly, and appropriately at day's end?
I would say he has, because his predecessor, you know, Charlie Strong, only got 3 years. And he had 21 losses in those 3 years and ended up his next to last loss was on the road to Kansas. And you can't really be showing progress if you're losing to Kansas, even in year three. A lot of people thought, well, that's not enough time. But, you know, you see the way the program was trending under Charlie, and it's very similar now with Tom. And I don't know if it's fair or unfair. It's just what is. It's what's real, because this is a fan base that, you know, is one of the top four winningest programs of all time. And they've won just one national championship since 1970. And that came in 2005 when Mack Brown was here. So expectations are immense here. That's why, you know, Tom Herman makes $6 million plus every year and has a buyout of more than $15 million. If they do want to make a change. So I don't know if, you know, I'm not sure fair is the right adjective you would use when you're talking about football programs at Alabama and Oklahoma and Ohio State. And Texas has so far fallen below that level that they're trying to stay nationally relevant. And they've had a hard time doing that with Tom. He lost his very first game here to Maryland and then lost to him again the next year. So they lose to a lot of unranked teams. He's lost seven unranked teams already. So is it fair or not? I bet you Tom wouldn't think it's fair, but he knew what he signed up for when he came here from the University of Houston.
Oh, understood. As we continue our conversation with Kirk Bowles, Kirk, what has been missing? What has been lacking? That ingredient, whatever that it factor is around Texas football that helped it climb to the prestige that it's been at for so long, what at least under Tom Herman, what is missing?
Well, I don't think they've developed players as well as they should, and that's kind of been a constant theme from outside, because, you know, they're not just sending scores of players to the NFL. And last year, as good as they were, you know, Devin Duvernay was one of the best receivers in school history. And he went, I think it was the third round, I think, to Baltimore Ravens, but really haven't heard much from him. And Colin Johnson went to Jacksonville in late rounds. And, you know, they're not just tearing it up as far as NFL seeing you getting playmakers and developing them for next level. So I think that's a big part of it. And then just defense, they have not played consistently well on the defensive side. And that's one reason why Tom Herman fired Todd Orlando as defensive coordinator last year. He's got seven new assistants on his staff. So when you bring in, you make over almost your entire staff, 7 out of 10, you know, you lose some leverage there. It's like, okay, well, if it happens again and you're still not improving, Are you the problem, Tom? So, and I would say primarily it's been, you know, they finally figured out the quarterback. Sam Ellinger's as good a quarterback as they've ever had, and as good in the clutch and with intangibles as they've had. But the people around him haven't been to that same level. And whether that's identifying talent or a failure to develop it, you know, that's for smarter people than me to determine.
Well, interesting perspective, however. Nevertheless, Keontae Ingram is out. What does that mean, this offense without him? I know Dejon Robinson certainly has a pedigree, and that's putting it lightly, but the running back situation, what does that look like on Saturday with Ingram out and Robinson stepping to the forefront?
You know, it might even help them a little bit in that they have bought into that rotation backfield by committee, and it's kind of driven fans crazy a little bit. They haven't had a 100-yard running back performance all year. Sam's kind of been their leading rusher, and he's kind of beat up, to be honest now, Dan. And we asked Tom Herman on Tuesday about it, and he said, yeah, Sam's hurt all the time. He's the way he plays, he's a physical quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's not an elusive runner. He's an effective runner, but he likes to run, especially, you know, inside the 5 or 10 yard line. So, Bijan Robinson, this 5-star kid out of Arizona, they're looking for him to explode onto the scene. And he had a really strong first quarter against Oklahoma State last week. And then he didn't, I think he only got like 2 touches the next 2 quarters. So we're not sure if there's a rhyme or reason. So they may be rotating too much. So maybe Bijan Robinson, who will be starting, I guess, for the 3rd week in a row, this is his time to shine. And maybe, you know, they hope it'll be his coming out party.
Yeah. Sam Ellinger, where does he rank in the annals of great ones that have stepped under center at Texas? Because the way that you put it, and the way that I guess the narrative is starting to shape up as if this window in Sam Ellinger's career has been, for lack of a better term, wasted, really underscores how special a player he has been. So put it into context for me as to what West Virginia fans are going to be watching on Saturday under center for Texas, because it sounds like he's right up there amongst the great ones.
Yeah, he's, you know, I would put him right there, top 10, if not top 10 fringe. And as far as his legacy goes, you know, he's not in the legacy, he's in the winning. You know, he's one of those, you know, cut him open and he just bleeds orange, and he grew up being a Longhorn fan and lost his father at an early age. So, you know, he's got all the intangibles you want. And, but the legacy is going to be lacking, quite frankly, if they don't, you know, run the table, get to Arlington and win a Big 12 championship. If he leaves here after 4 years without even a Big 12 championship, much less a CFP appearance, you know, that's going to be kind of a glaring omission, you know, on his resume as a Texas quarterback. It doesn't diminish his talents or his contributions, but, you know, we judge quarterbacks differently than every other position in football. You know that, Dan.
Well, it's all about the win at the end of the day. And as you mentioned, those haven't stacked up as much as the lofty expectations that Texas fans require. So having said all of this at day's end, Kirk, is it Big 12 championship or bust for a guy like Tom Herman? What is truly at stake here in 2020? And then secondly, when we visit here in 2021, are we going to be talking about a first-year head coach of the Texas Longhorns in 21?
I think that's possible. I think it's on the table, Dan, just because of the unrest among the fans. And then we hadn't even talked about the uproar over the eyes of Texas, you know, which elevated, of course, because they were losing at the time. You know, it kind of came to a head after back-to-back losses to TCU and Oklahoma. And after the Oklahoma game, Sam Ellinger was the only Longhorn to stay on the field and sing the alma mater. And it's kind of a cruel irony, I think, Dan, that the last time West Virginia came to Austin, it was a big flap over David Sills with the hook 'em down and Will Greer on the horns down after the 2-point winning conversion, and they're coming to play a Texas team that didn't even want to put their own horns up. So it's kind of a turnabout there. So does he have to win the Big 12 to keep his job? I wouldn't quite go that far. I don't think they've made that decision internally yet, but I think, again, it's on the table, and it's probably going to come down to how they finish the season. If he wins the next four and gets to Arlington, I think he's going to be safe because he'll be 8-2 going into that game. If he's 7-3, maybe. The whole thing is that if they determine the fans have checked out and they're not coming back, that could be a huge ingredient in the decision by the administration. So yeah. I think really all things are on the table, to be truthful, Dan.
Yeah, that's the great points. And, oh, by the way, since you mentioned it, and the horns down, David Sills, Will Greer, crazy that that's 2 years ago here, West Virginia's first trip, with the Mountaineers winning 4 out of 5 in Austin. How does the Texas fan base view West Virginia? I guess we're still relatively new to the party here, even though this is going to be the 10th meeting and the 9th season here in the Big 12. I still ask that question as to what West Virginia means, I guess, to Texas and how they're looked at in this conference, particularly from the Longhorn fan base. So could you put that into perspective for us, Kirk?
Well, I agree with what Neil Brown said this week. He said, I don't think either side perceives it as a natural rivalry because obviously they're not a geographic rival, and proximity has a lot to do with it, if not everything to do with it. So they're not close in geography, and they don't have a long history of playing each other. That said, I think each side views the other as a damn good program, and a program that has been nationally relevant and that always plays hard. So I don't think they look down on West Virginia from this standpoint. It's just, you know, it falls below the blood feuds of Oklahoma and A&M, if you will, and maybe some other ones like Arkansas used to be when they were in the Southwest Conference. So, you know, in a lot of respects, when I look at this West Virginia team, I almost see a mirror image of Oklahoma State. You know, great defense, strong defensive front, great running back, Lady Brown. He may be the equal of Chuba Hubbard, or maybe even ultimately the better running back, and a very accomplished quarterback. So I don't think Daigie runs like Spencer Sanders. Not many do.
No.
But I don't see a whole lot of difference between these two programs. So Texas better be watching its P's and Q's because they got all they can bite off on Saturday.
Yeah, it really makes for an intriguing matchup for all the reasons that you mentioned. And quite a bit is at stake for everyone as well, which only raises the intensity level that we're going to see on Saturday afternoon at DKR Stadium. Hey, Kirk, thanks so much. Really enjoyed the visit. Let's do it again. All the best to you here moving forward, and appreciate the time. It was great stuff as usual.
Thanks for having me, Dan. You stay safe up there.
Really good stuff, and really puts into perspective what West Virginia has the ability to do if they go in there and pull off this big victory. That can really turn Texas on its ear in a bad way, handing them a third conference loss. Well, a big part of that could be Mike O'Loughlin. How will he play a role, and how has he emerged here from coming in as a undersized tight end, a receiver, frankly? A great Mike Joseph success story is Mike O'Loughlin, how he has literally and figuratively grown in to his tight end role. Amanda Macy will join me for this interview with number 87, Mike O'Loughlin, so stand by. We'll have it coming your way right after this.
Today tastes like game day at home, like assigned couch seating. Tastes like coffee table dining and an ice-cold Coke to cool down the heat. It tastes like the game you've waited for all week with friends you've known your whole life. Today, tastes like watching football is supposed to. And it never tasted this good. Coca-Cola. Together tastes better.
Welcome back to the Mountaineer Insider Podcast. As promised, West Virginia tight end, the 6'5", now 255-pound redshirted sophomore from Illinois, Mike O'Loughlin. I had an opportunity to sit down with Amanda Macy and myself.
Tell me about just the role of the tight ends with this offense this year. You guys are kind of the unsung heroes. You know, you don't really show up on stats with everything that you do. So how do you just feel about how, you know, your unit is playing right now through 6 games?
I think the unit's doing pretty well. You know, obviously we're getting a little bit more involved, which is a good thing. We started off in the running game, especially last year, you didn't really see the tight ends do a whole lot in the passing game. But we kind of stressed in the offseason that it's really important to build a foundation in the run game. And obviously that opens up doors in the passing game. So this year, I think we've done a really good job just listening to Coach Brown, Coach Trickett, and just doing what they're telling us to do. And it's worked out so far, so keep it up.
Obviously, Texas comes in high-flying offense. They score a lot. How important is it going to be for you guys on the offensive side of the ball to get early and often and kind of set the tone of this game?
Yeah, I think that's going to be really important. Obviously, they have a very good defense, and K-State was a great team. You know, they're coached really well. So I think what kind of was the factor in that game is we held our own offensively. We took control of the game offensively, especially early on. So if we can do that against Texas, I mean that's the goal. So, we're just going to be looking to do that.
So Mike, I'm curious, where were you when you came into the program? They've got you 255 now. Where were you when you came in? Were you at like 210? Were you at 190?
When I was getting recruited heavily by West Virginia, I was maybe 200 pounds, 205 pounds. Receiver build, everyone recruiting wanted me as a tight end, so they knew that I was going to put some weight on. But when I got here, I was probably 225, 220, and then was just working with Mike Joseph first summer here, getting a little bit bigger, working on the physique. And then first practice in pads as a Mountaineer, tore my ACL. Obviously no one wants that to happen, but I think it was really a good thing in the end, because I was able to focus in the weight room and put about 30 pounds on, which was really important for my growth.
How important has Mike been to you to be able to get to where you're at right now? Because it seems like a great success story for everybody involved, to sort of take you very projectable, but then to mold you, if you will, and construct you in the weight room to what we're seeing on the field right now.
Yeah, Coach Joseph, that's what he does. He's a top dog in his job, his line of work. But yeah, he's been a huge factor in just growing and molding into that tight end body, which was something I struggled with a bit early on. Just the eating and gaining weight, I was always somewhat of a skinny kid, so I never really thought I'd be able to do it, honestly. I thought I'd get to maybe like 235, 240, but we really focused in on it, honed in on it, and, you know, we got it done. It was a lot of hard work, and it was just consistency of lifting every day, twice a day for, had to be about 6-7 months before I was even running or doing anything. So it was just strictly lifting. And, that's kind of the formula.
Are you where you want to be from a physique standpoint? Would you like to put on 10, 15 more, or do you figure, 6'5", 255, that's pretty good for, you know, a tight end. You want to be able to maintain your agility. So where's the sweet spot, I guess, for you?
Sweet spot for me, I like 255. 250 is really the ideal weight.
Okay.
But with a season, your weight's all over the place. But I never really thought about putting on more weight. I don't think I need to at this point. But that's something down the road. I'll think about whether I want to lose weight and focus on speed and stuff like that, or gain weight and do the opposite. So that's something maybe down the road to think more about.
So talk to me about embracing contact and the collision course that is the tight end position as opposed to playing receiver. I was talking to Dale Wolfley, my broadcast partner, and he mentioned that as he was reviewing the film, especially against Kansas State, you were able to run into some guys, and it seemed like you really enjoyed that. I'm assuming that's a different change of pace from you for you, and something that you've really had to wrap your arms around, and it seems like you're enjoying the heck out of it.
Yeah, that was something, like in high school, I was a receiver, but I took pride in blocking. My high school receiver coach said, if you can do both, you know, more power to you. So taking pride in blocking is a huge thing for me. And just being here early on, watching Trayvon Wesco run into dudes and just light them up, and just his mentality, of guys before me talking to me about it and just giving me some knowledge. And then especially coming into that body of 255, gives you a little bit of confidence, you know, because when I was 220 and I was blocking guys, it was a different story. You know, it was a fight. And then once I kind of, you know, I took a break from football for, it was a full calendar year really before I played actual football again. So when I went out there, I had to be reminded by a bunch of people that I'm not 230 anymore. You know what I mean? So putting on that weight and being able to move people, you can assert your dominance that way. So that was something that I embraced because it was new to me. It was cool and obviously a big part of the game and can help out the team. So, yeah.
Kind of an out-of-body experience, I would think, to be able to realize that strength and then actually put it in practice and to be like, whoa, I can do it. Almost like a superhuman sort of power. You hit some sort of cheat code on your own personal video game.
Right, yeah. It's like, you know, when you're a young buck just going through it, it's like, you know, it hurts or whatnot. You don't really know what you're doing. But when you put the weight on and you get the right technique and you're working on that stuff, then it comes a little bit more natural, which is more fun because then you can just go out there, be yourself and trying to knock people out, you know?
So as it pertains to what you and TJ sometimes on the field at the same time were able to do, pre-snap motion was really big against Kansas State. It seemed like they were uncomfortable with it, particularly from the tight end position. Is that something that you enjoy being part of and essentially an X factor, so to speak, because they've got these two guys here. They're kind of just, you know, freakily built dudes. We don't know what their potential is. And here they are sort of moving around sometimes simultaneously. That's pretty disruptive stuff.
Yeah, there was, I'm sure it was maybe 90% of the snaps we were in motion, which for a team like K-State, that can cause some problems. And then if you look at the NFL level, a lot of teams are starting to do it. I know the Chiefs they motion Kelce and those guys maybe 75, 80% of the time. And it really just, it's a tell for the, you know, for the quarterback. He can kind of see what's going on in front of him defensively, whether it's man or zone. So it's an important tool to have in the toolkit. And, yeah, we've been just using that a lot more lately, and it's been working out.
So what do you like? Do you like lining up off of the formation? Do you like lining up, I guess, where maybe the split end would traditionally line up, or an H-back? Do you have a preference there? Do you feel more comfortable in one spot or another, or do you just like to keep teams guessing?
I guess just keeping teams guessing. There's really no – I mean, we do it so much from every different spot, so it's you know, it's not really, I don't really have a preference, but yeah, I think it's important to keep teams guessing. So if we can keep doing that, I'm going to keep doing that.
All right. So what's left on the boxes that you got to check here? You know, as you grow and you develop, you still have a lot of football left to be played here at West Virginia. So what's the next step for Michael Laughlin?
Next step is just keep getting better every day. You know, yeah, you got goals and stuff, but I mean, ultimately, if you get better every single day, you're going to be, you know, the player and the person that you want to be at the end of the day. And that's kind of what we harp on in this position room, especially when last year we weren't involved as much. This off season, every single week, every single month, we tried to just build. And as a player, I think if you do that, you'll be pretty successful. So that's what I'm going to do.
Appreciate Michael Laughlin stopping by. Same thing with Kirk Bowles of the Austin American Statesman. And we hope you enjoyed the podcast, everyone. This was a fun one to put together. Again, on the air, 8:30 on MSN Radio affiliates around the great state of West Virginia. And then we'll have the ball going up just after high noon. So be sure to turn down the sound. And if you'd like to go to syncmygame.com, we could tell you exactly how to do that. If you want to maybe Bluetooth your digital listening device, whether you get us on TuneIn or the WVU Game Day app, a great way to sync it all up through your home theater speakers is to go to syncmygame.com. It'll tell you how to do that with your DVR. Really slick, and I use it all the time to listen to Tony when I'm watching, you know, the men's basketball games when I'm not on the call for the WVU women. It's a really, really slick tool. Syncmygame.com, that's how you could turn down the sound and turn up MSN. And of course, you can find us on one of the many great radio affiliates throughout the Mountain State. 8:30 with the Go Martin Mountaineer Tailgate Show. Myself, Coach Dwight Wallace, and the Wolfman will be back in Morgantown, and we'll cover you 3.5 hours up until kick. Tony and Jed, they'll be live at the scene at DKR Stadium, where West Virginia looks to make it 5 wins in 6 trips to the Lone Star State. So until then, everyone, be safe, and hail West Virginia. Let's go Mountaineers. Thanks for joining us here on this week's edition of the Mountaineer Insider Podcast.
You've been listening to the Mountaineer Insider here on the Mountaineer Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. And be sure to find the latest news and information on the Mountaineers at WVUsports.com. The following has been a presentation of Learfield IMG College.